Hello and welcome to No Killing Goblins, Season 3, Episode Wistrum Days, what you've all been waiting for. I'm Dragonus.
He forgot the number, it's 8.
Yeah, the number doesn't matter, it's just this is Wistrum Days. That's Oshi, by the way. You can tell because they're making Sourpuss Pedantic complaints.
Uh-huh. What's wrong with Sourpuss Pedantic complaints, Mr.? I'm angry at all things D&D all the time.
I am not angry at all things D&D all the time, just for, like, this entire month.
Okay, let me put it back. I'm not the one who argues on Reddit.
Oh, I've gone way past arguing on Reddit. I spent most of my day on the... You know, I'm not even going to get into it. Let's just say that this OGL discussion has definitely energized the part of me that just needs to argue with somebody. And that...
For those not in...
Oh, and there are plenty of people out there who, for some reason, just really want to go hard to bat for a multi-billion dollar company. So, you know, I don't even feel bad telling them they're wrong.
For those who aren't aware, we're re-recording this episode, and it's a little past the middle of January. It's It's unseasonably cold outside, and I am being reduced to talking about the weather because I have refused to speak to anyone if it's not about business all day. And this is the first time I'm having a conversation with a person.
Sorry, what?
Oh my god. He just straight. Do you guys listen
I had,
to this man?
I had an ADHD moment, don't judge me.
Did you know how many times he, like, straight up ignores me, and I'm just sitting there waiting for him to pick up on the clue that he's supposed to speak?
I was gonna say something, and then my attention span just gently slipped away into the night, walking away in, like, a trench coat and a trilby hat, smoking a cigarette in the rain while a train goes by. Like, my attention span was gone.
We should do a radio play.
We should probably not, but it would be pretty funny.
I mean, it would be, we don't actually have to record the voices, but we could do like the script for one. I mean, we're not creative enough to be Pirate ABBA, but we're creative enough to like come up with a radio play. I was listening to podcasts most of today with Nicole Byer, Bob the Drag Queen, Mona Exchange, a bunch of other shit, and one of the podcasts I was listening to was the It's Sunny podcast. For those out there in the world, It's Sunny and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That's, yes.
I am nowhere near smart enough for that, but thank you for your confidence.
I am shocked that you think it takes intelligence to write. Do you know how many stupidly bad things get on everywhere? It literally is just about, like, doing it over and over, and then just somebody saying, okay, you can make it.
I have read some absolutely terrible books that I bought in actual bookstores that were actually published by, like, actual professionals, and said to myself, wow, I'm not even this good, and this is awful. But I've never read anything so bad that, like, I didn't think, well, at least they're probably still better than I am. That's just me, though.
I mean, it's just, okay, it's just, creative endeavors aren't always about being a success. Sometimes they're just about being fun. And I mentioned the radio play because I was, like, I told you just before the start of this, I was listening to the episode of the It's Always Sunny podcast where Lin-Manuel Miranda and the composer who helped Charlie write the musical episode of It's Always Sunny. I can't remember the episode's name. I think it was The Night Man Cometh. They did a full fucking stage play of this, which was ridiculous. And I was like, okay, these guys are ridiculously talented and they do all these things. But the way they talk about the creative process is basically just like, have fun with it and do it. Who the hell cares if nobody looks at it? It's you guys doing it.
Oh,
Most
yeah,
of
I
it.
have plenty of stuff
Why is
with,
that a bad
like,
thing?
some old NaNoWriMos and a whole bunch of D&D mods and a whole bunch of other, like, stuff like that that I have tucked away in a. Well, actually, no, that hard drive actually set itself on fire, and in retrospect, that may have been because I put too much of my bad writing on it.
I have to get some kind of like backup hard drive for my computer because World of Warcraft is taking up way too much of my hard drive space. And I'm not even playing it as much as I was. I was literally playing it earlier in the late in 2022 as a birthday gift to myself, not a birthday gift, like a I need to get the hell out of my head gift to myself for December. It worked, but I need to like get rid of it now. I gotta get back to work,
I
man.
is WoW that big?
It's 80 gigs on a 200 gig hard
Oh, only
drive.
200.
Like, it's too
Okay.
much.
I mean, step one might just be buying a bigger hard drive. Like, you can get a 1 terabyte even for a laptop, very, very cheap.
I know that, but do you know how much of a pain it is to install a hard drive into a
It depends on
laptop?
the laptop.
I don't
Some are
do that shit.
easier than others, but yeah, I get your meaning. But
I figure an external will solve all that
yeah, an
issue.
external just for like movies and other stuff that you don't care too much about, like the speed on. I had a guy, there was an old laptop hard drive that I had for I would had to have been a decade, and one day I boot my computer on, I go to play a game with some of my friends that was installed on that one. I'm like, wow, where did most of my Steam library go? And all my notes for this year-long D&D campaign I've been running. And hold on, where is all of my other stuff? And then I started to smell the ozone.
Oh, that sucks so bad. Like, it's one of. It's almost as bad. Like, this is the dumbest thing. I don't know why I'm even mentioning this, but. No,
Oh no, I was
go
about to
ahead.
say,
You had something to
at
say
the
before I.
time I was ready to just go crawl into a hole and die, but it was a while ago now, so I have made peace.
Backups for your backups for your backups. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah.
I can't. I don't know if I'm supposed to. I'm allowed to talk about this. I think I'm not allowed to talk about this, but I'm gonna talk about it anyway. We'll use pseudonyms or something. So, I have this friend who does not live in New York City, moved away, and has been feeling a little depressed lately because, I guess this is the. A happy story. Depressed lately because he moved to a particular area where, because the weather was supposed to be better, the taxes were supposed to be lower, and things were supposed to be generally like a good thing. And he's very close to being a Republican without actually ever agreeing to be a Republican because they're assholes, to queer people. But the dude's house is basically in a flood zone now because he lives in California.
Oof.
I'm sorry. I know I should not be taking any pleasure in this, but he lives in the fucking valley that's being
And
flooded right now. I don't know why I find
living
that
in
amusing.
California is itself inherently pretty funny to me, but I have a deep hatred of California stemming from their 55 mile an hour statewide truck maximum speed limit. I hate that state. I hope that the whole thing. I about to say I hope the whole thing burns down, but that would be insensitive. So,
I'm pretty sure New York has a 55
no.
mile speed limit. Doesn't it? On the or you're talking about
Yeah, I was talking
highways.
about like in the entire state of California, which look at your maps, folks. It's a big one. No truck at any highway or interstate can go faster than 55 miles an hour.
I don't know. It's been a kind of situation where I keep, for some reason, it's because it's the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Let's be real. It's because everybody's made New Year's resolutions and they're reconnecting with their old friends. So everybody's like getting in touch with me. And like these are people who have like full on wives slash husbands slash children slash careers now. Meanwhile, I'm sitting in my nice little teeny apartment in, this is not Manhattan, in Queens. And, enjoying my quiet life where I don't have children, obligations, or a partner. And I don't know if I'm supposed to be sad, but I'm not sad. And it's been making me feel weird, because aren't I supposed to be sad? I don't know. Like, I got sad at the end of the year, but not over this stuff. I got sad because, like, there was, it's seasonal, partly, but also just because I wanted to quit my job, but I couldn't. That's the most sad thing that happened to me. Meanwhile, people are talking to me about fertility problems. I'm like, what? Where am I?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's, you know, some people adult in other ways than other people adult, and adulting itself is just a pain in the fucking ass.
Can we... Okay. There are some people who will straight up tell you that if you use the words adulting, they will hate
good.
You.
If somebody really wants to judge me over using the words adulting, I don't want to know them anyways.
Like, the firmness of their... the firmness of their surety that anyone that uses the word adulting is bad. I wish I was sure about something like that. Like, ever.
I have a few things like that that I'm sure about.
Like what?
That the entire concept of Star Wars, the light side and the dark side, stands up perfectly fine on its own, and most people that want to, like, talk about how cool the Sith are edgy children or edgy adults who need to grow up. Yeah, you know?
I thought it was just a really bad version of cyclical, dharmic
crap. It borrowed a few concepts through that, but mostly in the way that they had been reflected through a lot of the weird New Agey stuff that had been big when Lucas was a kid. It's complicated. It's kind of inspired by that.
Yeah.
But no, it's like a fundamental thing. Balancing the Force does not mean balancing the light side and the dark side. It means removing the darkness because the world is inherently at peace when it is stable, and the dark side is an invasion of the stable peace that we could all live in if we could just be in harmony and not give in to those negative emotions, which is a bit of a simplification, but...
I had this whole thing where I was like... I read this whole thing recently. It was some kind of tech bro or someone's... But the idea that peace and stability are something to be completely desired isn't necessarily a good thing. Because... It's also, peace is often conflated with complacency and a willingness to go along with whatever the society wants and things like that. And that can often lead to, like, horrific things. Like, it always goes back to this, the Holocaust. I don't know.
I understand the argument. Kind of... You know, there's the famous Chinese, may you live in interesting times thing. But... Right. It often casts aside, or not casts aside, but ignores the idea that there are a lot of really terrible, awful things that can just naturally happen. Tornadoes, earthquakes, you know.
Yeah, but those are, except for our world now, usually it's a rare occurrence.
Well, they've never been rare, they've just, how do I put this? Those things happen all the time in some places. They're not rare. It's weird to me that anybody would describe them as rare. I'm a little bit thrown off now. Anyways, the world naturally sucks a whole bunch. We don't need to, like... I don't know. I you know?
Oh, no. The argument from some people is literally that if the world sucks so much, it's justification to make it suck for other people so it can be better for me. Why not? If the world's gonna suck anyway, why does it have to be suck so much for me the same as everybody else? If I could take away all of their stuff and just make my life better, why not?
Well, because it's deeply fucking unethical. That entire train of thought just
Ah!
makes my teeth grind.
You want to get into like all the bullshit philosophy? We're not doing that. I will, however, talk about something else. I was gonna actually transition into the episode topic, but I had a weird thought just a second ago. So, we talk a lot about the Wandering Inn, we give our thoughts on chapters and
Yeah.
stuff, right? One of the things I always wondered is when a writer is supposed to be, like, I guess we're neither of us are writers, but the answer to this maybe can come from somebody who's a listener too, maybe. When you're listening to someone critique you, how do you know, you can you ever predict what you'll like retain and what you won't? Like we're humans are a tribal primate species who like we're all about society, generally speaking. There are always exceptions, but when we absorb critique, how do you know what will stick with you? And I'll give you an example. Like when somebody called my voice seizure inducing, I will never forget that. I stopped being able to edit after that for a while, and I found somebody else to edit for us for a reason.
Yeah, so first off, I just want to say I'm sorry, listeners. The first time we recorded this, we had a way lighter and more fun conversation about Wednesday. But in well,
We
no,
could
in,
do
instead they get our
that.
deep philosophical conversation about the nature of criticism and what does and doesn't stick with you, and me calling people that like the dark side edgelords. As for what sticks with you, honestly, I figure that when it comes to criticism, the stuff that sticks with you is the stuff that makes you mad. And
Stuff? I don't know. Does the good stuff not never
I mean,
stick
it
with you?
might, but like at the end of the day, if it does stick with you, it's probably because the person who said that they thought you were good either did so at just the right moment to be that ray of sunshine into an otherwise unhappy point in like your day, week, month, or year, or they did so in a creative way, right? Like it when people just say, yeah, this is good, that's one thing. But when people like go into a description, something that in its own right would like, maybe stick out in your brain a little, then maybe that would help it stick better. One of the reasons why, if I'm saying I like something, I try and be like evocative and descriptive about why I liked it and what it did to me when I was, reading it and stuff like that. But like, if somebody's not putting the effort in, then yeah, it's the shit that pisses you off. This is the rude stuff, the stuff that like, gets your goat up a little. That's what I think sticks by default.
I now I'm thinking about Wednesday. I can't stop thinking of Wednesday. Like you just I had a whole philosophical thing that wasn't. Now I can't stop thinking about Wednesday, and especially the Wednesday with her weird
The Goo Goo
dance
Mutt.
thing. I don't know.
Tina, yeah, that
Oh,
dance took it
God
from
damn
me
it!
in a like a decent 8 to a very solid 9 for me.
Yesterday, Pirate was in Acid Chat, and they were trying to find like stuff to watch. And apparently they have like 5 subscriptions and they've watched one series in the whole year, which is fair. I mean, they work all the goddamn
Yeah.
time.
Ugh.
But we were talking about stuff, and I was saying that the new Prestige TV place isn't HBO because they got gutted. It's Apple
I mean,
TV.
you say that, but Apple's had like they're swinging, they're definitely trying, but like after the foundation, I just fucking dropped that subscription and did not turn it back on.
Pachinko was gr like the dr drama, like no sci-fi show is perfect.
Okay,
You
this
know
is,
that.
I'm not
None
saying
of
I
them are.
expected perfection. I'm saying I expected better than a 2.
Okay, look. Foundation was not the show, but th there's plenty of other, like, better ones. Comedies, like. Mythic Quest. There's Pachinko. Pachinko was so good, and
I've
nobody.
Heard
I don't
some
know
good
if anybody
stuff about
watched
stuff
it.
that was on Apple TV. I'll probably pick it up eventually. But right now, I'm really enjoying Netflix. Like, I'm a big comedy special person because I can put them on in the background while I read or while I try and sleep. Netflix has been doing the most with those. I like a lot of their original stuff well enough.
Like what? Okay, wait. Before we get into the original stuff, dude, Shen Wang, did you watch Shen Wang's special?
I might have. The name sounds familiar.
You need to. He got introduced by Ali Wong, and he's just. I know that people are like trying to be that. There's a whole thing where controversial comedians are better. Blah blah blah. Fuck that shit. Shen Wang talked about. Fucking Walmart and the size of his sink, and I was fucking laughing the whole goddamn time.
Yeah, and I mean, God, I don't even want to. It's not, I don't think
What?
controversial comedians are inherently better. I just think if you're willing to court controversy and, like, aim for the edges of those lines, you're more likely to hit, what's the word I'm looking for? There's, like, being one of the George Carlins, right? The people who are
Right.
good forever. But even then, like, comedy ages poorly, and it's the fastest thing to age. So you get this double dose of a week after something's funny, it's not anymore. And when you try and
Well,
court that greatness, you also put your foot in your mouth and then suck on it.
I mean, comedy is about as much about the person listening as it is the person saying what they are. There are very few people who are truly timeless when it comes to comedy, George Carlin being one of them. But for the youngins who listen, please Google George Carlin. Don't make us
Yeah,
tell you
if you
who he
don't know
is.
who George Carlin is, I actually recommend that you specifically just Google 7 words you can't say on TV. That is everything you will ever need to know about George Carlin, his style of humor, and what he had to say. It's him in one bit.
Oh God, my friend Dimes was complaining so much about the Vikings Valhalla show that they put on Netflix. Very dark, very whatever, but the amount of shit that that they got wrong about Vikings, she gets really riled up about at cultural
As
accuracy.
she should.
Okay, yeah, as she should. I don't know why we're still rambling on. But honestly, I kind of just want to chat for a little bit. Because what do we have to say about Wisdom Day other than we love it? Because it
Yeah,
was
no,
really
Wistrom
great.
Days was really great, and I can talk a lot about it. But you're right, it is also just kind of enjoyable to shoot the shit for a minute. Because I think you, oh yeah, you had asked me what I actually liked on Netflix, and I was about to, like,
Yeah,
own up
what?
and admit to liking, actually, you know what, this isn't out yet, but I saw the trailer, and the trailer made me laugh so goddamn hard, it made me keep my Netflix subscription for this month. It's called
I
Yuki.
haven't.
It
Oh, I think I've
it's
seen
got, like,
that.
Jonah
Hold on.
Hill and,
Yeah,
David
it's the
Duchovny,
one with
Eddie
Eddie Murphy,
Murphy.
right?
Yeah, and it's about this
Right.
Jewish guy, and
Okay, hang on. It's basically an updated Look Who's Coming to
kind
Dinner.
of, yeah. But it's by, oh my God, what's his name? Hannibal Burris? Kenya
Kenya
Barris. I almost said
Barris.
Hannibal Buress for some
No.
reason.
Kenya
Yeah,
Barris.
Kenya Barris, who's, like, one of my favorite comedian people.
Okay, come on. Kenya Barris, it has a very, very particular style, and he has no filter. He brings
Yeah,
his
you're
intent. Like,
either there or you're
there are
not.
some people. Yeah, and like Kenya likes to bring his entire life and his bags and his wife and his kids and his entire existence in there. Like when he was going through his divorce, he made the main characters of his biggest show, Black-ish, get
To
close
be
to a
fair,
divorce.
Blackish was really explicitly him putting his life and his feelings and navigating, being black in America on the page. So it makes sense that it would
I mean,
reflect
the
his
ne
life.
And the next show he did, which after he left and divorced ABC and went to Netflix, was Black AF, which was his life again. And again,
yeah,
the same.
It
the
was
same
a bit
shit.
samey, but I will admit that this looks like it's going to be really interesting, in part because Jonah Hill co-wrote it, and
Okay,
with the
yeah.
way the premise works, I think you kind of have to do it that way, and get both of their voices involved here, because the premise, for those reading along at home that haven't just Googled it yet, is a.
I like it best when Kenya's like the writer and like director sometimes, but he's not a great actor.
Yeah,
And, like, he's
I
not
can
that
see
great.
That. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. But
there's nothing of
the premise of it is that a Jonah Hill plays a Jewish guy. He falls in love with and proposes to a black woman from a Muslim family, and it's their two families meeting while the two of them try and maintain sanity and decency and navigating just how god-awful this whole situation is going to turn out for them.
There's no like cruelty in this. This is just weird people, like different cultures and people meeting. That's
yeah,
all it is.
Although there is an incredibly spicy line. Just watch the trailer. I don't even know if I have it in my heart to like repeat it out loud.
Okay, hang on. Just to be clear about something, it has Eddie Murphy playing as the black family patriarch, opposite Julia Louis-Dreyfus playing as the matriarch of Jonah Hill's
yeah,
family.
Yeah, and David Duchovny's
so,
Jonah
Eddie
Hill's
Murphy.
Father.
Oh my god, you can't even forget that, oh god, who, Rhea Perlman's in it, and then who is the one playing, Eddie Murphy's wife?
Oh god, I want to remember her name, but I cannot.
It's not Lauren Lynn, that's the main characters. God, I can't remember who the mom is. Nia Long! Oh my god, I was about to have, because Nia Long is everywhere. I grew up on Nia Long.
Yeah.
If you grew up in the 90s and you had UPN and you were like, not white, you watched UPN because there was no other TV for anybody who was not white. And all you had was the black shows on UPN, and Nia Long was all over UPN. She did she's huge on Big Mama's House, and she's acted with Eddie Murphy a lot. And she's so funny. She's just so fucking funny.
Yeah, anyways, it looks like it's going to have just the right combination of stuff, unless they get their balance wrong. On the subject of comedy aging quickly and poorly, oh boy, if they get their balance wrong, this is going to come out of the metaphorical womb rotten.
The big thing for the scene that sold it for me is there's a scene where Eddie Murphy and the black couple is meeting the black
yeah.
family is meeting the Jewish family, and they sit opposite each other, and Eddie Murphy quotes a preacher, and then
he didn't quote him, he said I forget the name of the garment, and I'm not even going to pretend because I'll say it probably wrongly and horribly offensively, but it's like, yeah, this was given to me by Louis Farrakhan.
And then, for those who don't know, Louis Farrakhan is incredibly
yeah, like, very, very.
Like, incredibly. And Julie Louis-Dreyfus, I remember what he said about Jewish people. And she does that smile that you like, the uncomfortable smile. Like, she's so... The only other person that I would have accepted in this role is... Who's the one from who played Phoebe?
Fuck.
Like, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just more cutthroat than her, but it's there. They're like, they just transitioned from playing a ditzy lushes in the 90s right up to evil white women, or Jewish women in this case.
Well, I think, like, they definitely paid a lot of attention to the casting here, I think. Like, I think Julie mm-hmm. Louis-Dreyfus winds up being the right call for them because I don't know if she specifically is Jewish, but I know her father was.
Her father is a Jewish billionaire. She was raised in the... Yeah, she's very... I don't think she's a practicing Jew, but she is of
yeah.
Jewish descent.
Which is its own whole separate conversation there.
Okay, anyway, I think we're coming up on
Oh
the
yeah,
30
we
minute
should
mark,
probably
and we
start
should
talking about
probably
Mushroom
start
Days
talking.
eventually.
Eventually.
Well, so Mushroom Days is Wistrom Days has a lot going on, and it is hard for me to figure out exactly where the right point to start from is, because so much of it is about understanding the context of characters we've already met. So half of me wants to start talking about Pisces and who he is when we meet him in the story now, and Pisces when we meet him in the story in this. Same for Saria, actually. Although, since Saria's got a much less drastic arc and transformation, it's not quite as juicy, I don't think.
I think Wistrom Days is what sold me on the idea that Pyronappa could create like an entire world around this, because it spoke to the idea that Pirate had thought about the background of each of the characters that they wanted to invest in. And there was no, I mean, it's not perfect. There isn't always huge amounts of depth in every single aspect, but Pirate thought about this. Pirate created a location, created side characters that would be important to our main characters, and they created dynamics and structure to the way the social structures work, and the way the money works, the way you travel there. They took the time to think about as much as they could within the
Yeah, and
time they
even
had.
if you like look at something and say, wow, there's not a whole lot of detail about this specifically on the page, you get the strong feeling that if you were to ask Pirate, Pirate would either already know the answer or would understand the world they've created well enough to give you one on the spot. Not that I recommend doing this, Pirate works hard enough as it is, but it gives you that like level of depth and verisimilitude. And Wistrom almost like you can feel in your head this visual as Wistrom as this big imposing shit Hogwarts.
It's, I don't, I think the immediate impression is that it's going to be like a Hogwarts thing. And then as you progress, you remember that, oh, Pyronappa wrote this. So they have a tendency and a love of deconstructing a lot of the more light versions of whatever they're working on, the magic school, the golem that walks around, all these things, and trying to actually think about how the pieces would fit if you were trying to write a good story. And by good story, I mean their version of a good story. I'm sure that everyone has their own versions of what is great and not. But in their case, it's all about how do I reflect back this story of Hogwarts? These people come and they become great and powerful because they're just such good people, and they prove themselves and they succeed, and oh no, at the end, oops.
I always thought of it as, what if instead of being a functional school where you could come to learn, the magical boarding school that you travel off to was a dysfunctional wasteland filled with bad actors and few educators, and where your only hope of trying to educate is to educate yourself?
It's fascinating the dy like, you know what I really appreciated? There's only good things to say for me for the entirety of Wistrom Days. As a functional like piece of work, it's very good. It's very a lot of people quote it as the way they like to introduce people to the Wandering Inn. And honestly, it really does serve as sort of prequel, and I kind of wish that there were more exciting stories like this. And I know Gravesong is out and everything, but I really do wish we had taken Wistrom Days and or something similar to this and
Wistrom
packaged that
Days,
rather
like, I
than.
think that you absolutely could sell it as its own book. I just don't know if I would look at Wistrom Days and say that it's got the same, like, ability to be detached from the story in the same way that Kara's story can be. Whereas, like, with Pisces and Saria and their characters being so closely tied in with the main narrative, if this was its own separate packaged out thing, it would feel wrong to me.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking though about the nature of the school and the way that it sort of subverts the usual boarding school magical story and everybody's adults coming in, stuff like that. I just had this thought. So I don't know if you remember way back when we were talking about Ryoka and her issues with the Runners Guild, and I mentioned about how the story felt a great deal like a deliberate critique of the sort of Randian objectivist fiction. You know, Ryoka thinks she's going to come in and stick to these really obscure, aggressive principles and befriend an ally with no one, and everyone else can eat dirt because she's just better. And then she's put into this position where she realizes, you know, no person is an island, kind of thing. And Wistrom Days almost feels like a what if you took that sort of society, almost kind of like a Bioshock-esque kind of poking fun at that philosophy, and then had it not completely self-implode immediately and just keep functioning in its toxicity.
I've been thinking a lot about, like, when I think about the story, the takeaways, the characters that left the biggest impression on me but won't necessarily show up in the story. And for me, the character that left the two biggest characters that left my impression, because I prefer, weird people, is Cognita. And oddly enough, the centaur who died. Pirate does have a tendency to also create like characters that they're gonna kill but that we invest in. And well, you got me to invest in him and then killed him off. I'm not gonna
Yeah,
go into why
I
I
never
liked
would have
him, but
guessed he would have died. Actually, the two characters I found myself sort of latching onto were him and Montressa. Montressa stood out
okay.
to me because it almost has this weird reverse story arc from what we as the reader are feeling during this. Because we've known Pisces, and quite frankly, you know, a lot of people by this point might still be thinking of him as being a little bit of a piece of shit coming into this. And then, as you see his backstory, you go completely in reverse of like, he's a necromancer, he's an asshole, to that feeling Montressa has when she first meets him, where she's kind of looking up to him and might have a little bit of a crush on him. That part might just be me. But like, the general idea of like, wow, this Pisces guy is so fucking cool. And he is. And anybody who tells you otherwise is either wrong or just hasn't gotten this far yet.
Yeah, I just really loved the there's I always love characters who just not immortal, but those who are sort of have a duty and they kind of carry through. And maybe that's weird of me, but I liked the idea, at least at the time. I liked the idea of thinking of Cognita as trapped in a place that she kind of is responsible for, but she actually likes her job a little. And she doesn't necessarily like the reason she's trapped, but she likes interacting with certain people and doing certain things, and she just goes through it every day. I kind of wonder what a Wistrom where, I mean, she rules it now, but what a Wistrom where she was genuinely in charge and she taught magic and learned magic would be
That would
like.
be
And
fascinating, yeah.
I kind of wanted to. I wished it would have been possible. I wish that would have been the story. I kind of want to read that story. I want to see what Pirate Abba could do with it. Because, that's what this story was meant to do, and it sort of did, is that it gives you the booming ideas about this world that you're looking at, and that there's so much more to it, and there's so many more layers to it. And that it isn't all daisies and
I
sunshine.
can go on.
And And the point of all of that being to draw you in and make you want to read
Yeah,
more,
on the
right?
subject of like that feeling of what could have been ism, like, fan fiction bait, I feel like one of the highest bits of praise I can give this story as, a sort of pastiche satire of magical boarding school type stuff. I have so many fan fiction ideas that spawn off of this. Everything about this feels like fan fiction bait through and through. All the character interactions, all the characters, all of the story setups and situations give you so much the understanding of them enough to kind of say what if. It is in a way that the rest of the story has never once made me think all that much about wanting to do fan fiction for it. Wistrom Days does. Like, Wistrom Days demands fan fiction, almost.
Yeah, I don't know if I have much to say about it. I wish we could go back to the old episode, but even that one was kind of short because
Yeah, at.
we didn't. It's not a cruel thing. It's not a mean thing. Pirate did a really good job, and I got
I've still got
nothing.
some stuff that I would talk about. Well, no,
Oh, go ahead.
so the character arc specifically. I think so. Like I said, Ceres just isn't quite as meaty. We get a good, like, better feeling of who Ceria, is and where she came from, and the relationship with Ilfrace, who is also a spectacular character. But I think about Pisces because there's just this huge dichotomy of, like, this miserable, unwashed bandit. Terrorizing people with illusion spells to get by, struggling in his day-to-day, and Pisces as he presented himself at Wistrom as this, noble, dashing fencer, good at everything. Even Cognita is charmed by him and likes him. He always seems to, have this great information network, and he is the ace. He's good at it all. And, how much must it really suck for him and his soul to be where he is if, he just had the pride to admit how much it fucking hurts to be where he's at now? And it's a really compelling arc for me, and specifically the fact that if he had just been the person that they kind of treat him as, he could have been willing to just let some people die. And never have let anyone know he was a necromancer till he was tar far too entrenched to get rid of. And instead, he proved himself to be a better person than they give him credit for. And that's why they get rid of him.
I just really don't agree because for me, the development of Ceria's character as she was at that point in her life versus who she is with that we see in the main storyline is like night and day. And it is so deeply amazing for me to see the kind of determination she has play out, and a lot of the characteristics that Ceria like shows off in Wistrom Days becomes even more evident as the story develops, because I think Pirate was kind of sure of who Ceria was but also wasn't at the same time, and it took a little bit of writing about Pisces and Ceria's past for Pirate to like solidify who Ceria the character is. And honestly, I will say this now, there is one thing that will bug me forever and ever. That motherfucker threw the goddamn spellbook in the ocean. I don't care if it's like the gold. You do not throw a book into the water.
Today, in this
How dare
2023,
he?
the year of our Lord Haruhi, that still makes me fucking mad.
It's not even because Theria didn't get
Yeah,
it.
like,
He
why
threw
waste a
the
perfectly
book
good
in the
book?
water.
Like, Well, I kind of get it, right? It is a powerful book. It's clearly got something Ilfris may have done to it. You try to read it, you're not Saria, you could get hurt. You try to get anyone to help you in opening it, people might find out you have it, people might make sure that shit gets delivered to Saria, and they may not be too kind to you when you do it. It is a lot of trouble and a lot of difficulty and a lot of just... not my fucking problem in one object that you can just drop over into the ocean and never think about again. But, like, come the fuck on, man. There's being an asshole, and then there's being an asshole. Like, I will admit, I vaguely think of that character in terms of, like, what if the bully from an 80s or a 90s movie grew up and just kept being that guy? But even for my mental image of that character, what the fuck, man? And
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Ilfris just... thing actually made me think of another interesting point. So, what? A lot about this volume is asking questions about what it means to be, you know, part of a group, although it's not so much along ideological grounds or, you know, what your class is grounds as it is along, you know, species and so on with the goblins. But this does a lot to really make you ask, what is it to, like, be magic, to love magic, to pursue magic, to be a wizard? I mean, yeah, they call them mages, but they're fucking wizards, right? Like, what is it that you are pursuing? Why do you do it? What is it to have that passion? And Ilfris is a stone-cold badass, and I just wish we got more of her.
I did enjoy the argument that passion is the determination of who is a mage, who is a real mage versus a fake one, I guess.
Well, I don't know if I'd say, like, yeah. I like the idea of fake mage. These people obviously put the effort in, they learn, but it feels like so many people at Wistrum aren't there for the sake of the art and for the magic and for what it could be. They're there because, you know, they're there, and the atmosphere and nature of Wistrum as it is, the idea that it's a school that you go to where everything is traded in secrets, it is the exact opposite of a fucking school.
I did have a point to make. It's like real academia. It's like stepping into the real academic, like, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's like peeling back the paint to see the giant cockroaches behind it, because academia is one of the most vicious arenas you could ever get in. Nobody likes each other. Everybody trades secrets. Everybody's out to publish something. Funding is all that matters. And there's this saying that the smaller the stakes, the more vicious people get. Holy fuck, do academics get vicious over things like where people sit, who has the best parking lot,
poem. Fuck it. Orangutans. Oh my god. Edward Allan Poe poem.
Oh, I love the dynamics whenever they try to make a committee. I had to sit as a secretary, like, not as a secretary, as in, like, I write things, like, as a... They brought me in to just sit down and keep records for them. And then they were like, oh, our secretary's gone, so you're going to be the actual secretary of our committee, and we're just going to put your name on it. It's okay, right? Because they drove away the last person who kept records, because one person was having an affair with the head of the committee who was having...
I've heard some pretty wild stories, because I live in a college town, and I've dated my fair share, mostly of a lot of grad students, really.
God. Grad students.
I was young, forgive me.
Go ahead, sorry.
It was better than the alternative of trying to date undergrads who are just the stupidest creatures on Earth. But I've definitely heard some crazy stuff, especially when it comes time to, like, start thesising.
Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap this episode up. I think we've officially reached our time limit on this. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Say bye, Dragoness.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins,
edited by Liquid Ender.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at NoKillingGoblin or email us at NoKillingGoblins with an S at gmail.com.